Good morning, everybody. It's Sunday morning at the beginning of February 2019, and we are here, Lizzie and Justin from Third Space Coaching, for what is week 71 of our Turning Towards Life project. It's an absolute delight to be here again, and we are coming onto this call having grappled and wrestled with technical things because I'm in London and Lizzie on the site is on the side of a mountain, as I'm sure you'll say in a moment. Yes, I'm really so glad, Lizzie, to be here again. And you've chosen a wonderful source this week, which I'm very excited about talking about.
So, hello from Austria, everybody. It's been a right kerfuffle getting here. I had to ski really, really fast. I'm skiing with some friends and my husband, and I had to ski really fast to see if I could get any 3G because I didn't have any reception where we were. So I'm scrabbling around and I found myself at kind of slightly empty restaurant to just sit in for this half an hour and talk to everybody. And I also don't know about the reception either, so please forgive us if this technology doesn't work 100%. I'm really, really, really glad to bring this source. It's a very kind of interesting and compelling source for me, and also quite confusing. So I'm looking forward to what the conversation holds. Justin, are you happy if I read first and then
Of
you
course.
read?
Yeah.
Okay. And excuse all the bashing, clanging in the background. It's somebody laying all the tables and it's a
It's
little
going to
bit
be
loud.
a whole different thing this week, isn't it? So you're going to have crashing and bashing in the background. The restaurant may fill up with hungry and
Exactly.
ears.
Who knows?
We may have our internet interrupted. So for any of you who are with us, hang on tight. But there may be some bumps along the way, and who knows if we'll make it to the end, but we will do our best.
Send us some technological vibes to help us through. So this poem is called Fearing Paris, and I think it's also called Seeing Paris, and I think I might have got the title wrong. I looked it up on the internet and I'm just with my mobile phone here, so I didn't have enough resource to get it right, I don't think. Anyway, it was called Fearing Paris on the internet, and I think that it's also called Seeing Paris, so we'll have to find out which the correct one is and then
I
we can
think it's
discuss
actually
later.
called, Lizzie, I think it's actually called See Paris First.
Oh, okay. Got
That's
it.
where I've found
Okay.
it. I have it in a book where it's called that, so.
Okay. Books are probably more reliable than the internet. Okay, so here we go. See Paris first. Suppose that what you fear could be trapped and held in Paris. Then you would have the courage to go everywhere in the world. All the directions of the compass open to you, except the degrees east and west of north of true north that lead to Paris. Still, you wouldn't dare put your toes smack dab on the city limit line. You're not really willing to stand on a mountainside miles away and watch Paris lights come up at night. Just to be on the safe side, you decide to stay completely out of France. But then the danger seems too close, even to those boundaries, and you feel the timid part of you covering the whole globe again. You need the kind of friend who learns your secret and says, see Paris first.
So here is See Paris First by Marcia Truman Cooper. Suppose that what you fear could be held, could be trapped and held in Paris. Suppose that what you fear could be trapped and held in Paris. Then you would have the courage to go everywhere in the world. All the directions of the compass open to you, except the degrees east or west of true north that lead to Paris. Still, you wouldn't dare put your toes smack dab on the city limit line. You're not really willing to stand on a mountainside miles away and watch the Paris lights come up at night. Just to be on the safe side, you decide to stay completely out of France. But then danger seems too close even to those boundaries, and you feel the timid part of you covering the whole globe again. You need the kind of friend who learns your secret and says, see Paris first.
So the thing that arises really strongly listening to you just read that now, Justin, is this turning towards life thing again. Like somehow it's another way of saying the thing, which is how do we live a life of turning into something rather than running from it or turning away or denying it or something. And I so appreciate how I feel like this poem says, well, it starts as Paris that you're avoiding, and then it's kind of grows and grows in terms of the boundary of what you're running from somehow. And to have the person in our lives that says, hold on, we can be here, we can look at this, we can see Paris, and then what kind of consequences does that have? It's a different one to avoiding it, for sure.
I've been thinking about this poem a lot, Lizzie. It's wonderful coincidence, or maybe not coincidence, that you chose it this week, because I've been working all week, as you may know, with a group of people who are studying together for 2 years, and I had this poem ready to read during that. I didn't actually read it to anyone this week, but we're in a program that's incredibly developmental that unfolds over a long period of time. And one of the things that has really struck me in working with people this week and in working with myself is everything you say and something else that occurred to me, which is, I think, is implied really strongly by this poem, which is what we fear. Let me see if I can say it this way. It'd be one thing if it was just, you know, your life will be more full, you'll have more space, you'll have whatever if you see Paris first, which is kind of part of what's going on in the poem. But the other part that's going on that's so beautifully expressed in this is what we are afraid of but won't go near ends up shaping our entire lives in very profound ways. And so there's a sort of... you know, one angle on these kind of things is, well, just turn towards what's difficult for the sake of turning towards what's difficult. And there is something in that. But it's limited as a way of thinking about things, because I don't want to walk into situations that will be harmful for me just because they'll be difficult for me. I don't want to stick pins in all over my body because it will hurt just because it will hurt. That's not taking care. And so that you can get sort of... difficulty in understanding, like, why should I do that? Why should I turn towards this? And the answer is here, which is that for a brief moment of time, our pushing away what we're afraid of makes us feel very courageous. I'm free from it now. But very quickly, it becomes apparent that our whole lives are being lived around the space that's left for this thing, or we've carved out a tiny little corner for ourselves. And the only place that we can live is in this tiny little corner. And that's a huge price to pay, not just for each of us in our own lives, but also for everyone around us who gets robbed of the gifts that would come from this vast territory that we won't go anywhere near. Because it would feel, that's the thing I love about the poem. So first of all, I won't put my feet on the city limits, and then I won't stand even on a mountain where I can see the lights over there, and then I won't even enter France, and then now the whole world is filled with it. I mean, I really know this so much in my own life, living an entire life. Sometimes I'm aware that that's what I've been doing. Living an entire life shaped by what I'm afraid of encountering. So it's such a gorgeous invitation that the poet makes here, which is what you need is a friend who will, you know, sit you down and say, Paris, someone who loves us enough and who knows us well enough.
Yeah, it's really very beautiful poetic invitation to something that it needs poetry to make us listen in a way. Like, of course, I don't want to, you know, that like that Enneagram quote that I read last week. Of course, I don't want to face my fear of being trapped. Of course I don't. But if my life is lived in response to not wanting to be trapped, I make all kinds of judgments in my mind about what that means, and the things that I've judged as meaning I would be trapped, I don't do. Yeah. So, for example, if for my life, if I'd attached commitment to being trapped, it would be so difficult. And in my personality structure, that is something that happens, that anything that I have to say yes to, it means that I have to say no to a whole swathe of other things. And I say yes to one thing, and the fear comes up of, oh, I'm trapped with this decision, I'm trapped with this one thing, and there's so much other stuff I could be doing, so many other greener grasses I could be pursuing. And so if I live my life in the fear of this being trapped, rather than facing what it is to feel trapped and to be deprived of the things that I really want, if I live my life in fear of that place and didn't face it, my whole life would be organized around, well, how do I not be committed to anything? Because to be committed means to have to face this fear. And I feel like it's a very beautiful, poetic invitation, because I could live, and I did a long time live completely blind to that fear that was driving me. So it also takes something to even get in touch with our fear, to get in touch with the thing that we are building our personality and all of our actions around, and to have that friend. In this case, for me, my friend was the Enneagram that talked to me about my fear. And I thought, oh God, yeah, I can see that, but I couldn't see it until somebody helped me see it. And then in the seeing of it, I could see how I constructed everything around it. Like keeping my options open, saying yes to 100 things, being scattered, not committing fully to anything, being half-baked about all kinds of things. I mean, I'm still pretty half-baked now, but like, I think I was way half-baked before. And it didn't allow me any kind of depth. It didn't allow me any kind of contactfulness with anything, because that also meant a narrowing of my choices in a way. And so I'm so appreciating that this isn't just like, I mean, you know, a fear of something happening can be one kind of fear. But my sense is that this is about a kind of a core fears that then drive so much of our lives to be built in a certain way, so as I never have to face this thing. And of course, I feel deep freedom in commitment. And like, I have choices available to me that I'd never had before, because I'm actually in something. I'm actually contactfully involved and committed, means that I have all kind of, the world opens up in a whole different kind of way. But I couldn't have known that if I didn't face into what it felt to be in this fear. And for me, it meant really kind of going through multiple processes of really feeling like what it would be to be trapped. And it's a physical thing too. You know, what is it for me to be constrained? What is it for me? And I remember in a workshop, and I went through a process, and the process was to tell me what it feels like to be trapped. And this big, big image came to me, and I could feel it in my body, of being in one of those prison cells that's like a 24-hour, when you've done something really bad and you get put in solitary confinement and you have a straitjacket on. That's how frightened I was, like really, really frightened. And I remember finding a way to hold myself in that and be present to that, and to really see Paris first, and like actually feel into the core of that fear and find some kindness and find some contact with it, so that it didn't mean that I had to just be bouncing off it all the time to protect myself from this absolutely horrendous reality that would come up when I had to choose, you know, even like an ice cream in a gelato shop. It's like every choice felt like a death. And of course, in a way, every choice is a death, but because my relationship to the death wasn't healthy, wasn't one where I could see more possibility, it felt like I couldn't choose, and I couldn't commit, and I couldn't find a deeper way of being. So I'm loving this invitation now. And again, it's so interesting, because I hadn't thought about all of this before. I'm just literally now invited into this as being connected to it. So I really appreciate that, and I can feel myself relaxing and kind of settling, because I'm in contact with something really important for me in my life through being invited in this poem.
So many things are occurring to me whilst you're saying all of that. One is, it's a reminder of how helpful it can be to start to do things which allow us to feel stuff. So I was thinking about body practices like yoga or stretching or meditation or anything that will have us be in contact with the, it's a wonderful practice I know you know about, Lizzie, also called focusing. Anything that will let us be in contact with the felt sense of our own bodies, because one of the wrappers, you know, the Marsha Truman Cooper lays out all of these sort of concentric circles of ways in which we keep ourselves away from Paris in the poem. And one of the ways here is that you talked about was not even knowing that I'm afraid because I can't feel it. So that's the first thing. And I'm feeling very present to me as we're talking, which is, I think I've said here, I've certainly said to you, how often I feel afraid these days. And I don't remember feeling afraid when I was younger. I felt other things. In fact, there was a whole load of things I didn't feel at all. And it's been an enormous step to find out that I am afraid as a way of finding out what I'm afraid of. That was one of the things that occurred to me whilst you were speaking. And the second thing was just listening to your account of yourself and your facing this and thinking about me, it occurred to me to say something that I may have said on a different call that comes from Thich Nhat Hanh and his work on fear. So Thich Nhat Hanh, as you all know, Lizzie, is a wonderful Buddhist teacher, and he's written very extensively about fear, and he says this extraordinary thing about fear, which is that seems really true to me, is that fear is always about something that hasn't happened yet. And that when we come to encounter the thing that we're afraid of, very, very often, in fact, I think he probably goes as far as to say we always, but I'll say very, very often, we find that our capacity to be in contact with the thing that we're afraid of, the thing that's happening now, is way, way greater than we ever imagined. Because whatever's happening now, the fear part is not about what's happening right in this moment. The fear part is about what might yet happen. It's so helpful to know that, because to know I can, to find the part in ourselves that can, I can be here, even though it's very, very strong and intense feeling. I can actually be here with this. And then here comes something else, and I can be here with this again. Even really frightening things. It turns out that we humans have the capacity to do that, which is one of the great paths through this invitation in this poem. And I've been practicing this, I realized, quite a lot recently. You know, you were talking, Lizzie, about your fear of being penned in, that you learned from the Enneagram. And one of the things I've learned from the Enneagram that's been incredibly, has been revelation to me, is how, and feels really true, is how the basic fear of mine has been one of abandonment. If I do X, you'll leave and I'll be on my own. And so then constructing a whole personality structure out of making sure that that never happens, which of course doesn't actually stop it from happening, because that's not how, we don't have that much control over the world. It's an illusion. But, you know, giving up on what I want, staying quiet, bending myself and accommodating myself to other people, not getting in conflict, not speaking up, a whole load of suppressing any feelings of mine that might be troubling to somebody else. And it's just such a tiny, tiny, tiny little space. And I know I'm not done with this project yet, but what I am finding is the more I'm prepared to risk being real, the more I find out, often I don't get abandoned, often people step in closer, but B, when people do decide not to be around, I can be with it. I can live with it, partly because I'm finding out that my fear, what I was afraid of about being abandoned, is not actually what happens in the world anyway. So it's like reclaiming, it feels to me like reclaiming the territory around Paris and reclaiming Paris itself, which has the power to undo all of this. And I'll just say one more thing, because I might forget it. So I've been reading Robert Keegan's really, really beautiful book, In Over Our Heads, which is an extraordinarily kind book about development. And I came across this one passage a couple of days ago where he says that our fears are an extraordinary kind of loyalty to something. We became afraid in the way that we did because we got loyal to something that got born in our early lives. And it's really helpful to see our fears that way, not to see being afraid as some terrible thing, which I then have to push away, but actually seeing that I'm afraid because I got really committed to something. I got really committed to not being abandoned. I got really committed to not being constrained. And when we can see that, I just think it's beautiful language. He says, then we have the chance to leave home in the way that's always called for, which always turns out to be another homecoming. You have to be prepared to let go of the loyalty you've had to this, you know, loyalty to not being abandoned or loyalty to not being constrained. It's a painful letting go to something we've really committed ourselves to, but it's always the path to, as the poem says, to finding a new kind of home in which we can live, which has a different kind of space to it.
Well, that's so brilliant, Justin. Like when I think of myself as loyal to something, so if there's a part of me that's loyal to not being trapped, I can totally find the story suddenly. I can see that there was a part of me that thought, ah, that's what being trapped is, and that's not what I'm going to be doing, because I can see the pain that it brings, and therefore I'm committed and loyal to the cause of not having my life be like that one. I can really feel that really, really strongly. And then I can sense that, like, oh, there's a good intention in that. You know, I had a good reason to build a life around not being that way. And of course, it's a mistake to think that. And it's a young thought. It's a young place of not having a sophisticated enough understanding of complexity and ancestry and all kinds of things. But in this place now, I'm thinking, ah, as a little girl, I knew it was important that I sought a life that didn't have that in it, like that there's intelligence in it. And then, of course, like all of our development, we come back around again and reconsider all these things as adults. If our lives turn out that we're, and probably if you're watching Turning Towards Life, these questions of what it is to be human and how to be able to enjoy one's life and find meaning and a way to contribute, and you know, all those big inquiries we're in, I feel like at some point or another we would have had some kind of opening that makes us look at this again, makes us look at how we might in some way rewrite the story, that we could be freer and not be in the small version that we learned as a child of how to be in the world, but that we have to break those boundaries to find a way of living in a wider way. That's really, really beautiful, Justin. I'm really moved by seeing a little more, or seeing it like having a different way of naming something as a loyalty. Really feels like it opens things up to inquire, basically.
Yeah, otherwise, there's a risk with any of this, approaching our lives in this way, that it becomes a kind of punishment. I'm so terrible because my world is small, and it would be, and I'll punish myself or be punished. That's the path. And then if I punish myself for living in such a small world, somehow the world will get bigger. And even if it does, that comes at such a cost. It's kind of the self-improvement narrative, which is, I must be better. There's something wrong with me. And the task of my life is to keep on addressing all the things that are wrong with me, which is never ending. And so every new freedom comes with a desperately painful, undignified mistake, which doesn't recognize the sacredness and beauty of being a person and being a living thing. And that's exactly why I think Robert Keegan's language is so extraordinary, is to say, of course we got loyal to things. Of course. And when we're small, even when we're not so small, but when we're small, we have to figure out a way to live in the world, and we have to figure out something to hold on to that seems to matter maybe to the people around us, or that seems to make, I think that's often where it starts. Any of us who grew up with other people around, whether we had a loving or a difficult relationship with them, we're trying to figure out what should I get myself committed to here that will have it possible for me to be okay in the middle of it? And it's such a beautiful intention. And that's why his language, which I think is really, it's so well expressed in this poem, because it's about place. Robert Keegan's language is, I think I might have just said this a few minutes ago, but I'll say it again. He says that we keep on having to make the move to leave home, and then we find home again. To find home, we have to keep on leaving home. And in this sort of wonderful back to front way, leaving home in the poem is actually going to Paris. Going to Paris first, the one place that feels like not home, because recognizing that we've kind of built a life around a loyalty of never going to a place like that, because it would keep everybody else happy, or it would make me feel safe. Yeah. And then we can approach this not as self-improvement, but as widening the space of life that it's possible to inhabit. And there are good reasons to widen the space of life, not just for us, but for everyone else, everyone around us, and for the sake of life itself, that life should fill the spaces. It doesn't then make you a better or a worse person. That's not really the question. I think it's more the question is something like, what kind of life can come through this unique expression of life that each of us is? That's more of the question, what's allowed to come through here?
Yeah, and I think the minute you start referencing other people in relation to your own personal unfolding and process, you know it's a great sign that you're not on the money anymore. You know, that if you're better or worse than someone, like a better person or a worse person, it's a really great, simple thing that humans do. It's so quick, we could do it so quickly. That I think I'm a better person because I do this, or they're a better person than me because they do that or something. It's a great way of going, very quickly, I'm off the path now. Like that's not what the question is about. It's something actually really a lot more complex than that. Like it's about this life. I'm watching our time, Justin, and I'm also noticing that there's lots more clumping around in here, so it's going to get a lot more difficult for me to be on this on this wavelength with you. I'm so glad to be in this, and also just for me being in amongst a social kind of activity, something or other, and just sinking down into this conversation with you is really, really beautiful. And I can feel the support of the people who watch and listen to this in this moment, and I feel really, really in service to that. I feel really in service to the fact that we have these conversations and they're not just for us, and yet they are deeply and wholly for us at the same time. And I feel very nurtured and glad to be in the conversation and the invitation of it all. And also glad that somehow technology works through my iPhone in the strange cafe in the middle of Austria on a mountain. It's quite miraculous. And so I'm really glad that we got to do it, because there was a point where I thought, oh no, Justin can't hear me, there's no point in doing it. And actually, so far, the by hook or by crook rule has worked, and we'll just keep going. So I'm really grateful for that as well.
We made it through.
We did.
Thank you so much, Lizzie. I'm so glad we found a way to do this. And thank you, everyone, for joining us. And Lizzie, you're going to be in London tomorrow night doing Turning Towards Love with Holly.
I am.
Right.
That is
so
true.
Yeah. So check out if you're watching this in on or around the 10th or 11th of February 2019 and not watching into a later recording, check out the Turning Towards Life Facebook group, because there are details there.
Thank you. We'd love to see you. It's going to be our second group, and we'd love to have you. It's in Hammersmith. It's easy to get to from the tube.
So for anyone in London or nearby, that might be an option. And we will see you all next week.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Justin.
Bye. Bye.